Yes, it's Rake the Moon episode 12, coming off a 6-point week. Up for discussion, season ticket seduction from Swindon arrives out of the blue. You find the prices pleasing, plausible, or highly promotion-centric? We'll discuss. Then there's the Darren Aldacre renaissance. Has the midfielder rediscovered some of his magic for the run-in? And finally, taking on the turkeys. Some thoughts on Swindon v the sides terrified of heading into the non-league abyss. Now they're done and dusted with for the season. So let's start with the price of football that may or may not hint at a possible future podcast guest. Somewhat out of the blue last night, Swindon came out with their season ticket prices for the 26-27 campaign. Will it be in League 2? Will it be in League 1? We do not know. The early price offer for the side stands, £450 for adults and £425 for the town end. That compares this time last year to a £420 for the side stands and £400 for the town end. So you can see kind of rises in the £30 range there as well, with the early bird offer running till the end of May. So those are the bare prices. The promotional video appeared on Twitter, and we were just thinking, oh, there must be something going on. And lo and behold, that's what it was. So I did have a look, Sam, I must admit, on the socials and the kind of responses to the tweet. I was expecting mostly vitriol, but I don't think it was. It was, to be fair, that there are a real sort of range of analysis from ring me back when you're promoted, costs too much, to actually doesn't seem that bad. So I wonder what your take is on timing, announcement, and the cold hard cash figures.
Yeah, there's a lot to digest there. So we start with the actual cost of going to a game. I think for the side stands, it's quite an expected and understandable price rise in the current climate and with market conditions and all of the cost of living in take into account. There's also a cost of existing for a football club, and a rise of around about 7.5% sort of makes sense. The facilities are obviously somewhat better, at least in the DRS, they are better than what you will get in the town end. I think that still we have the discussion of paying £425 to £454 as an adult for a spot in the town end is a difficult pill to swallow for the view, the facilities, etc., that you have to deal with when you're there. And increasingly, it feels as though that there may even be an aim to give more people more value in the side stands to push them sideways. That could be entirely conspiratorial from me, but there is much more value now, considerably more value for those going into the side stands than there is in the town end. And we always thought, you know, a town end is an incentive by offering a significant reduction at a price that is more affordable for people to be able to go and support vocally, etc. And I think that price point is much harder to digest than the price points in the sides, which I fully understand the needs to raise prices. It's very difficult to price something when you don't know the level of football that you'll be playing next year, and they're making a commitment here based on either. Obviously, if they don't go up, then the cost of a season ticket for watching League Two football, particularly if it's a more difficult League Two season than this year, is really quite a lot at £481 from the 1st of June. That will not look great if they don't go up. If they do go up and you get an early bird offer, given the cost of living, given where season ticket prices have been historically in Swindon, it's not a horrible price point, even though I know for a lot of people it still is a horrible price point, because just about any price point in the current environment is horrible. So I think the pricing kind of falls into those two areas. There's another interesting area around the change for under 11s that no longer exists as a category, and that's now been split into under 14s and under 7s. So if your child was in the under 11s category this year and is moving into the under 14s category, you're going to see something like a 72% increase in the cost of their season ticket. And that's an interesting one. So, for instance, a child who would have been, who was six and is going to be 7-8, would have a big jump there. Obviously, in real terms, 30-odd quid might not be considered quite as much as than 72%, but obviously those people get affected disproportionately to others. So it's an interesting balance. I don't think it's something that, for the vast majority of cases, there'll be huge outcry at, apart from the fact that there's always some outcry about how much everything costs at the moment. But I think the point still comes back to the town end and what value that presents and what people might get for that. Because at the moment, as we know, and as we've talked about regularly, they get very little. I think the other point, Andrew, which I'd be interested to hear your perspective on, as well as the price, is the way in which a campaign is launched for these sorts of things. But I remember working at the Advertiser many years ago, feels like too many years ago now, when the club would actively engage in campaigning with the local media and putting together something that would be across all the platforms that have regular Swindon Town content, putting together with interviews and timing embargoes so that everything was hit with a big sales wave. Obviously, this has come a bit more out of the blue. The media were given 30 minutes notice of the release. Even yesterday morning at 11, when I asked the club about the timings for the season ticket price release, they were unable to confirm when it would be released. I'm interested to know, you've been in the media long enough, how you feel the club have used local press for campaigns like this, and whether there is more that could be done there.
Yeah, I wonder if they just fear getting lured into a conversation which is not so much about the value offered by season tickets, but the kind of state of the ground and this ongoing issue with the town end that perhaps they're not particularly keen to have. So I wonder if it's that way. And perhaps generally they clubs regard themselves, all clubs, I think, more as kind of content factories of their own making and less reliant on outside assistance to bring the message. I think if going back to the town end, as you say, if you do get the early bird, you're essentially for the town end, you're paying just under or a bit kind of, let's try and say this in English. There's like £25 difference for 23 league games between the town end and the side stand. So, £1 a game more to sit in a better stand with better facilities, it doesn't really bode the town end well. And I wonder if they'd rather not be questions about that or question about whether they might look at investing in it and making it, putting some safe standing in there, as we've talked about, or generally sprucing up and trying to solve this ongoing safety concern, stroke ticketing concern that they have. So I wonder whether that's a conversation they'd rather not have at the time when they're trying to push the season tickets out.
I'm sure it would be. I mean, there are ways in which you could campaign without needing to have those conversations if you, as sort of executive management, did not want to put yourself forwards. I don't think it's the sort of question that you or I would dare to ask Ian Holloway or one of his players. I think that the answer that would be spat back at us, particularly from the manager, if we tried to ask about redevelopment of facilities, would be rightfully quite disdainful. So there are ways in which you can campaign using local assets, which are effectively free marketing tools, let's not forget. And, I can't believe that the marketing budget within the club is particularly expansive as it is. So there would be an opportunity to use the reach of local media to be able to target more people in different ways. And I still don't quite understand the reluctance to do it. I'm sure that it's not just Swindon that this happens to. And you're right that football clubs regard themselves now much more as their own independent content machines. And they want to create stuff that it retains their own engaged audience. But ultimately, in this situation, the wider the net, the larger the potential return for zero investment if all you're doing is offering access to your employees to have a chat. So I'm a bit confused by the methodology from a marketing perspective. That said, there are only a limited number of people there that that have to do an awful number of jobs. So I would love to help as part of this local media, as a Swindon Town supporter. I would love to help spread the word of getting more people into the stadium, because more people means better atmosphere, means more chance of having a so-called 12th man cheering a team on to win. I think it's beneficial for the town to have more people going on a regular basis. It acts as a point of pride. And I think that any local media will be willing to spread that message and spread that message for free. And it's just a shame that that engagement isn't there. I don't know whose decision, if a decision at all is made on that, or whether it was never put into consideration. But I thought it worth sort of discussing, because we often forget that collectively everybody is roughly aligned on the same goals, which is they want their football team to do well. And while they might disagree on how to get there, one of the good ways of making a football team do well is by having more money to spend. And that means having more people in the stadium. So, yeah, I just wish that we were involved a little bit more in that part of it. But it's been and gone now. And instead, we'll have to do the analysis, and we do this sort of reactive content on it and discussing it, and fans will join in with that. And that can also lead to a more negative slant too. So, yeah, I don't think that these tickets for most people are badly priced, given all of the constraints that are placed on football clubs in their current economic environment. The town end needs discussing, and I think that we could have been used more, or the media could have been used more locally to help them spread a message.
Well, we shall see. And apart from anything else, we will have to see, of course, what petrol prices are like for a club and hotels, and goodness knows all the rest of the stuff that they'll be having to pay, hopefully to send the team to Sheffield Wednesday at this time next season. So let's spend the rest of the pod looking at the business of people kicking spherical objects around for money, profit and entertainment. Swindon winning at Tranmere, and Darren Aldake getting man of the match from Saturday's BBC Wiltshire co-commentator. Jonathan Smith having come back into the team for both of these key wins at Gillingham and Tranmere, starting those having had his sort of spell of kind of exile and absence. Firstly, Sam, from the luxury of your faraway chateau, what did you make of Aldake's performance?
I imagine it was much more luxurious than Prenton Park. I thought he was brilliant on Saturday, and also slightly reinvented, though it might be that he always had this in him, but certainly at Swindon, until the last couple of games, we've not seen this sort of all-action midfielder role being employed by him, even though he's sat in a holding midfield position at various points this season. This was very much a busy, energetic, combative display that also sprinkled in a little bit of stardust at times as well. And that's really important to have from a holding midfielder. You often hear from coaches talking about how they like to have two types of sitting midfielder. You'll have the quarterback and you'll have the disruptor. And on Saturday, Aldake basically did both. Gavin Kilkenny has done a lot of both over the course of the season. I think he's made the third most tackles among midfielders in the division this year. But often we've seen that alongside him, there hasn't quite been that sort of support. And Aldake has been criticised at times for not appearing as though he's getting stuck in. And I think that there was a big noticeable change last week in how he presented himself in his body language around the pitch, and then subsequently his impact on the game. I think it's not unfair to describe his natural style as being a bit floaty, and he didn't look like he was floating on Saturday. He looked like he was churning up the turf to get to the ball, recover the ball, and then obviously contribute going forwards with a number of really useful aerial diagonals, coming close with a shot from long range. I thought it was really encouraging. Had you seen this in him before this past week?
I don't think I've seen it all quite come together. To have that little bit of edge to go with the languid was certainly welcome, in kind of making a couple of covering tackles, which were pretty important. Swindon kind of played him further forward mostly, whereas I think he was in this more deep-lying role for Chesterfield, who obviously had his success in helping them into the league and getting back personally as a Football League player as well. So I don't think I've seen him produce something quite so complete this season in terms of all those sort of aspects of the game. But he's such a kind of fascinating player to watch because there's all that kind of technical ability and yet not a lot of pace. So to see him kind of just outwit players in midfield with a sort of drop of the hips or whatever, and then buy himself a yard to make a pass is always a good sign, I think. And it does feel like he's managed eventually to come back perhaps in a better place after the kind of little contretemps he had with the fans at Shrewsbury and a spell out of the team. So I think hats off to him for being able to kind of adjust to that, because it sounds like he'd take it quite personally and offer so much. And hopefully he'll be able to do that for the last six games. And, you know, you can imagine him being optimistic at Cambridge, being the kind of player who can produce the kind of pass there that is, you suspect, going to be needed to unlock the meanest defence in the league.
Yeah, I think he's shown quite a lot of character. He obviously had that incident at Shrewsbury. The rights and wrongs of it we can put to one side for now, but that impacted on him. I think it's evidently there's been a bit of an exchange of frank views behind the scenes after that. And to see him take that as motivation and incentive rather than to dwell too long on it is really good. It has the potential to sort of end a season when you have an issue like that and you can fall out of favour for a bit and others can come in. And evidently others have not taken the chance to the maximum effect to keep him out on a full-time basis. And he's been given the opportunity for redemption. And I really think that over the last two games, he's started that redemptive arc, and that's really important for him. It's really important for the team. I think it's really important for Gavin Kilkenny to have someone alongside him who can do the similar sort of job so it doesn't rely on him to do so. And maybe if we can see a resurgence from Oldacre, then we can also see a resurgence from Kilkenny over the final seven games of the season, because he's been suspiciously quiet since signing his new contract in January. So there's a lot of good that can come out of a player finding a stream of confidence and a bit of form that's not just for themselves. And I think it's a really good thing to see. And hopefully he can continue to contribute and maybe not be moved around a bit now. He's played on as a 10. He's played on the left of a 3. It appeared, though I'm not sure it was, for a period during that MK Dons game that he was sitting more as a right wing back than anything else, which is definitely not a place that you would put Darren Oldacre. But this sort of sitting role feels considerably more appropriate. And I'm excited to see what he can deliver.
Yeah, fingers crossed he can do well. And Gavin Kilkenny, if I'm right, has more outfield minutes this season than any other player. So to actually be able to take him off at Tranmere and go on to win the game, that might be a useful luxury, just to maybe find ways to refresh him from time to time over these last run of games. But yes, a usefully timed surge in form for these final matches. So the final thing which you've kindly indulged me to talk about a little bit more was Swindon have now played the five sides who are in realistic danger of relegation. I think we can count Tranmere in there. Their fans certainly don't think they're safe. Anyway, so they've now completed the task of handling Tranmere, Crawley, Newport, Harrogate and Barrow. And they have done so in 10 games, getting 28 points out of a possible 30. And of course, they were seconds away from making it 30 from 30 until Kellen Gordon intervened with arguably one of his most meaningful involvements in any Swindon game at any time. But I thought it was quite interesting to look at those and actually think, despite the fact they are the sides in the bottom five, and you know, they really are struggling, they're all going at less a point than a game, quite how difficult they've been in some ways. Late goals needed to beat Tranmere home and away. Slightly uncomfortable win and then the draw against Crawley. 1-0 with an early goal against Newport. Not exactly hanging on, but coming under some pressure. 2-0 at home. It took Fletcher Holman to open them up. Harrogate beaten at home, but then that really scrappy performance to win there. And then it's only really Barrow that have been dealt with a little comfort. And that just kind of makes me think, I do like to trot out the thing about the difference between the top and bottom of the league not being too much. And I know people complain about Swindon not beating the top sides enough, but to go and get 28 points out of 30 off the bottom sides, I think counts as something to be pleased about, the low number of banana skins that have been recorded there.
Yeah, and if you're going to be a top seven team, you've got to do that, I think. I mean, I can be entirely proven wrong by you going through one of the other six at the moment and showing me that, you know, they've taken less than 50% of points, less than 70% of points in those games. But I would imagine that the overall number of the percentage of points taken off those teams by teams in the top seven is going to be relatively high, whereas there's been a lot more middling results against teams in the middle of the division. So it is a sign of a team that can be ruthless against opposition that is a little less coherent, a little bit more anxious. And that's important. Obviously, to then become a top three team, you need to add an additional bit to you, which is going on long winning runs or taking 50% plus points off again, off the top 12, which Swindon are struggling a little bit more in that regard. But I think it has been the absolute foundation of the promotion challenge has been ensuring that the teams down the bottom have been dispatched of, and that there should be credit given to Ian Holloway and his players for doing that. The division is as a whole quite close in overall quality. There are very few teams that are head and shoulders above anybody else. So in fact, I would argue that there probably isn't a single team over the course of the season that has been miles ahead, as we've seen in previous years in this division. So there is a need to be that ruthless against the sides that are in poor form, low on confidence, not quite clicking, on bad runs, etc. And Swindon have done that. And that's really, really good. I think overall, I don't know about you, Andrew, but I still feel that there is a slightly unfair expectation of this Swindon team, what it should be able to do overall, probably based on the two or three remarkable performances that we've seen either in a half or as a whole over the course of the campaign. But this does show that they can dominate certain opposition. What do you think? Do you think that they are being fairly assessed by the fan base?
I think this happens to any fan base, in that you will see those sort of two or three games where everyone kind of hits the mark and it all goes right on the day, and it's kind of, why can't it be like that all the time? and I think the reality inevitably is that individual players will have off days. The nature of the league is a bit kind of, midfield is all very nice, but a lot of stuff does come from people making mistakes, I think, in their own penalty box especially. So it's just an inevitable frustration that people can't or won't, I think, hit 100% all the time, and you have got to sort of ride those sort of bits of variance and bits of dips, which is another reason why I just wanted to point to this form against the very worst sides at least being somewhat consistent.
Yeah, I think that the division is like that, and that is, you can have a team, as we've seen with Oldham, that you would have said 3 months ago was part of that group that Swindon have easily dispatched of home and away. Probably not quite as good. And then you've seen what they've done. And, you know, they did for Notts County, did Swindon a favour on Tuesday night. There's a lot of erratic teams, a lot of erratic results. And to find any sort of patch of consistency, even if it is in this particular instance just against those teams in the bottom five, shows an ability to do something that over time will put you in a good place. So, yeah, credit to them. I don't know what at this point now whether you would prefer to be sort of playing the teams that Swindon may be playing in mid-table rather than playing an opposition at the bottom five, or given the results that they've had, whether it would be preferable to be playing teams in relegation scraps at this point of the season.
I think I'm inclined towards logically preferring the more mid-table matchups where sides don't have that extra bit of motivation. Again, going back to Saturday, I mean, Tranmere did absolutely work incredibly hard to very nearly get their draw. And again, as at Gillingham, even though Swindon beating two sides who are badly out of form on both occasions, the fans that did remain absolutely stayed to applaud their kind of side off. So they didn't boo them. So clearly they put in, by their standards, more than decent or more than acceptable performances, and Swindon still found a way to beat them. So I think in theory, and we will see if this comes back to haunt me. So I'm adding in theory. You look at Fleetwood, Colchester and Accrington, Swindon have all got to play currently in 13th, 14th and 15th. You would hope that's a help. We will see if it is, I guess.
And potentially Walsall could drop into that group by the time they play in 3 matches time as well, depending on what their results are from where they are at the moment. If they lose a couple, they could also be consigning themselves to another year in League Two. So that would only leave three games against sides that are pushing for playoffs. And I think Swindon need to start raising their game against those teams anyway. So it will be a useful challenge for them if they are going to go into a playoff campaign, having played teams that are of similar quality and similar form. And we know the playoff dates now as well. So we've got to start booking them into the calendar. My wife wasn't particularly happy with the Sunday and the Friday and the bank holiday Monday. It got a big frown.
I'd really be rather avoiding an away trip on Sunday night after a 6 o'clock kickoff. I can't believe I'm alone in that, but we'll see what fate throws us, or whether Swindon, of course, do in fact need to make that torturous journey potentially to promotion via a semi-final somewhere and then a day out at Wembley. It's been a pleasure, Sam. A reminder, you can get all of Sam's Swindon Town coverage, analysis, features and all the rest for the not princely sum, which is not rising immediately, £5 a month, or a bit more to bag a whole year in advance with the Moonraker.